This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. I'm Greta Mart.
I'm Tom Wilmer, visiting with Katja Singel. Katja's an adjunct professor at Cal Poly State University, and she's also the author of Exiled, From the Killing Fields of Cambodia to California and Back. Hi, Katja.
Hi, Tom.
I read your book and was utterly captivated and fascinated and intrigued.
Thanks. It was the stories. I don't want to credit my writing as much as the people's stories in there that I think are so incredible.
What left me most curious, I've known you for a long time, been guest lecturer in your class and whatnot. We've done some stuff with the Cambodian stories before, and I never quite understood how did it all start for you.
I had a friend back in high school who was a Cambodian refugee. And in high school, I didn't really think much about that. But a couple years after high school, she started mentioning friends who were being deported to Cambodia. And I didn't understand because I thought, wait, aren't you American like me? She sounded like me. She went to high school. You know, we struggled in French together. So I didn't understand that. And so
how that could happen.
Exactly, yeah. And I didn't understand the whole process of legal permanent resident versus citizen and all those things. So I got interested in it, kind of back of my head. And then years later, once I was a journalist, I started hearing more about it. And I went to Cambodia and did a story about some of the deportees, specifically women, because I'd heard about the male deportees, but no one was talking about the women. And they're less, but there are women. And from there, after I did that, I realized there's so much more here than an article. There's a book.
Yeah. Well, let's start back in time. We're talking about the Khmer Rouge and the killing fields of Cambodia. Ugly, ugly episode. Tell us about that genesis and how they came to become refugees and why.
Yeah, Khmer Rouge, they only ruled for, I think it was just 4 years, the late 70s, and killed through starvation, torture, and murder, and disease. I think it was 20%, I always forget, it's a huge number, though, of the population. The idea was Pol Pot was the ruler, and to go back, it was this utopian society, go back, agrarian reform, and didn't work so well.
One another disconnect, jumping out of time, is in Southern California, in Long Beach, in those areas where you were embedded with Cambodians, in those communities, there are former Khmer Rouge people. I mean, that just gives me the shivers to think about that, walking side by side with relatives of people they murdered.
Yeah, actually one family who are victims of the genocide in Stockton, and I was sitting with them, and they told me even in their apartment complex, there are people who were Khmer Rouge. And I was like, what, really? And you know that? And she said, yeah, but we all know. And but some of the first camps after the Vietnamese came in and kicked the Khmer Rouge out, some of the camps in Thailand, actually some of the Khmer Rouge were in control of those. So, and for years, the U.S. recognized the Khmer Rouge and not the Vietnamese government because they were the invaders. So it was actually a messy thing. And then to get back to how they came to power, there was the U.S. had heavy bombing in Cambodia before the Khmer Rouge. So there was, I think that was the big thing with the story too, to show people think deportation, that's all America had to do with this, but there was a lot bigger connection.
And even that latter half of the 20th century history of Cambodia is so convoluted that you start understanding the Khmer Rouge and you think they're evil, and then the alternative group is just as bad.
Exactly. And when they first came to power, no one knew exactly who they were or what they were. People were happy. They thought finally there'll be peace. There was a lot of corruption with the government before, and there was the fighting and the war, and yeah, that whole area, you know, you go with independence from France, all sorts of other things. So yeah, it was hard in the book to put it in context, but not to get too bogged down in so many different issues.
And in addition to your time in Cambodia, was your embedded time with Cambodian families in Long Beach and Stockton? That's just powerful to read your book and read those anecdotal stories of their lives and trying to live in California.
Yeah, I think this book, I mean, would not be possible without the families who opened up to me and were willing to share really painful memories and also let me be there when, like, the one thing we did together was when one of the young men I was following had to check in with ICE, and I went with him. So to be a part of those experience a little bit, to be able to tell it more, not just through words, but action as well.
Very poignant, very powerful. When you think back of the people that you're friends with in Long Beach alone, can you think of an anecdote or a touching story to share?
Oh, it's funny. I ask those same questions of people I interview, and now I'm on the other end.
Table is turned.
There's so many. Let's see. Oh, gosh.
Well, how about the girl that's the hottie one? You know.
Sati? Yeah. Oh, I love Sati. I think she's a little, well, I don't know. She's older than me, but not maybe 10, 15 years, I don't know exactly, but, you know, kind of within my general generation in some ways. And Sati, in some ways, I felt protective of her because she reminded me of a friend of mine who also kind of very genuine and don't understand, like, you really shouldn't tell someone everything sometimes.
No filter. Yeah.
Yeah, she'd tell me about her new job, and then she'd tell me about how it was under the table and all these other things, and I'm like, no, you shouldn't say. And her mom would try and stop her. She'd say, no, that's how it is. It was this. And I could see where her mom was trying to protect her, and I even felt protective of her at some points, but just...
And her time on the run as a refugee back in Cambodia, that gave her some incredible survival skills.
Yeah, and she would show me on her stomach where she has scars still from where they would burn. I think it was with some of the torture she was subjected to, and burn paper or cigarette or something. I forget exactly, but she still had the scars on her belly. So she would show me things like that and tell me, and then talk about, I think when her mom once said Sati was... The daughter was being abused by a boyfriend at the time, and the mom said she didn't call the police because she was scared, because in Cambodia at that time, you know, you wouldn't call the police. What would they? So it was just that awareness, oh, yeah, what do you do?
Interesting. And you spent time with the Cambodian refugees in L.A. who were on the verge of being deported, and you went with them to the ICE meetings.
Yeah, well, so one, actually, I went to Sati. She had her court case, and I went to that, and then I went to, so she was on the list to be deported, given final deportation orders. And then another one, David, is on the list to be deported, but he hasn't been deported yet, so he has to regularly just check in with ICE. So I went with him.
Was he the one that thought he was going to be deported, so he gave you his credit cards and keys before he went in?
Yeah, he actually does that. He always goes with someone because they never know, but the most likely time to be deported is at one of those check-ins. So
they go in thinking that might be it. They're on their way out of here.
Yeah, because it's the easiest, because then you don't really have as much warning, whereas, so he actually, he always brings someone. In that time I was with him, so he gave me his wallet, his keys. But yeah, dealing with that every 6 months, you don't know if it's going to happen. And there was a raid later, not a raid, ICE did come to his mother's house later looking for him. So it's that living with never knowing.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah. Very, very powerful. You're going to be doing a book signing and a talk in San Luis Obispo this September.
Yeah, September 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. It's Day of the Farmers Market. I will be at Barnes & Noble and Slow signing books, so please come by.
And once again, the name of your book and how somebody would find it, it's out now?
It is out September 1st, and you can get it online, in stores, pretty much anywhere. If a bookstore doesn't have it, just ask them to request it, and they'll get one for you. It's Exiled from the Killing Fields of Cambodia to California and Back.
By Katja Sengel, Cal Poly Adjunct Professor in the Journalism Department.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure, Katja, always. And I got to tell you, I loved reading your book, but... It was a little depressing.
Even my baseball book, people say, was kind of depressing.
No, it wasn't. Not compared to this one. These are on the killing fields, cutting edge of life.
I think one thing, though, is I take hope from it, too, for what people can endure. San, one of the older women who endured that and then endured hardship in the U.S. and is still out there, and she still sees beauty in life. I think for me, that always, if someone can endure all of that, why can't I just endure my problems?
There you go, because they're not really problems compared to.
Exactly, yeah. It gives you some hope knowing what the humans will can survive.
All right. Thanks again, Katya.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Wilmer. We've been speaking with author Katya Sengel.